This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly program about computers. Today, we welcome back to the show science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg also writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays. One is a question and answer column, the other a column featuring useful and interesting websites. Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions. 333-9455, the number to dial in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL and toll free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Greg, welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Happy February. We're almost halfway through winter, right?
Almost to spring, right?
Yeah, we're almost there. We've got a call coming in, so I don't want to spend too much time talking with you before we get our listener on the air, but Windows Vista Service Pack 1, just released or just about to be released?
Well, it's in the hands of some folks, mostly the folks that sell you computers, that are going to have Windows pre-installed in it so they can have it in there ready to go, and folks who are in business and have lots of computers. Everybody else is probably going to get it about the middle of next month, I think, is what they're saying now. It'll if you use Windows Update, it'll appear in there. You can also go out and download it, or I think they'll probably – Microsoft typically makes a CD available as well if you want to get a CD of it and put it in there. So service packs, as is always the case with Microsoft and other software companies. They issue bug fixes and things to smooth out operations over time. And service packs kind of collect all those and into one big package and also add some things and are intended to kind of make things run more smoothly than maybe the initial release of the operating system did. In the case of this one, Service Pack 1, as with other Service Pack 1s in the past, whether it was XP Service Pack 1 or Windows 98 SE was pretty good. But it doesn't fix everything, but it fixes some things. And I think probably, people want to install it. It's going to probably improve operations generally overall, but it's not a panacea. And there is always, as it is the case with any major operating system update, the possibility that in your particular case you'd have something that it could create problems with instead of solving problems. So you might want to wait a while and look.
Let the reviewers review.
Yeah, see, check your forums of the software and hardware you use in connection with your computer to see if there are problems cropping up with things that you rely on in particular, that you got to have or you don't want to be without. As I understand from the earlier reviews of Service Pack 1, there are two or three good advantages to it. If you copy big chunks of data, big folder full of photos, for example, it'll do that a lot faster. And if you tend to put your computer to sleep when you're not using it, then it'll wake up and be ready for you to use it a lot faster. On the other hand, initially it may be slower to start up cold because Windows Vista gradually, as you use it, stores information about what you use to kind of speed things, the process of getting started up. And when you install Service Pack 1, data will be wiped out and have to be rebuilt. So initially, you might even find it slower to boot from a cold start. If your computer's completely off. On the other hand, if you just put it to sleep, it'll It'll start up and be ready to go faster.
Okay. So. Well, what do you say we take our first call this afternoon? Listener waiting for us on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Mac user, and I know you know about Macs, too. And I have an OS X that I think is about a year and a half old. I bought it before the... it was the last of its generation because I didn't want to have to deal with the Intel chip or whatever it was. So I think it's a Tiger. It's a 4. And I want to get a hard drive backup, one of those external hard drives, and I was wondering what you would recommend. And I'm also a university annuitant, so I think I would be eligible to buy from central stores, but I wondered what you recommended.
All right. This is a pre-Intel Mac running system 10.4, right?
Right, 10.4.1.
And you should be... Well, you ought to update that to 10.4.11, you know.
Oh, I can do that for free?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what will that do for me?
Well, there are bug and security fixes over time. I'm just kind of halfway kidding with you. If things are working fine now, don't worry about it, okay?
Oh, all right.
And as far as you just want to get an external hard drive for backup and do something in that way. So... Your choices, ma'am, is it an iMac?
Yes.
Okay. So you've got a couple of kind of ports there, the little places where you plug in, like your keyboard and all that kind of stuff.
Right. There are two USB ports, and then there's that...
FireWire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a headphone, FireWire, two USB, then... There's another one and then there's the one for the orange wire that, plugs into a network like
your,
the UI.
Yeah, your Ethernet
and then
port.
The telephone one.
Right.
But in
this case, you just need to worry about either the FireWire one or one of the USB ones.
All right.
Okay? Because that's where you're going to plug in your hard drive.
All right.
So you can go and any, if it's already formatted for the Mac, then that's convenient. Even if it's not, you can easily reformat it for the Mac. You want to get either a USB 2 or a FireWire drive. What I always suggest is get one that's the same size as your internal hard drive, right?
Okay.
And then... I like a piece of software, and if you type this into Google, you can find it easily. It's called Carbon Copy Cloner, okay?
Okay.
It's free, and what it does is you install it, and you tell it, I want to make a copy of my internal drive on my external drive. And
I don't need to write all that out. It'll have...
Yeah, you'll see. Yeah. You'll see how it's done when you have the software in there. That's exactly what it does. And in fact, it makes a complete and exact copy of your internal drive on your external drive.
Okay.
And then if you have a problem, with your internal drive and maybe you have to replace it or something like that, or, there's some damage, all you have to do is reverse the process. It's a simple way to make a backup. And you can do that, it takes a little while. But you can do it as often as you like. In my case at home, I use a Mac at home, simply, for the convenience. And I don't have anything on there that, it'd kill me to lose, so I do it once a month. But it'd be just as easy to do it, once a week or once every 2 weeks or whatever. It depends on, how much you want to make sure that your data is around there, right? And let me give you this. I looked up Carbon Copy Cloner here while we were talking. And if you go to www.bombich, so B-O-M-B like bomb, ICH.com, that's where you'll find that software.
Okay.
And so you want to get a USB 2.0 or a FireWire external hard drive, probably one as big as your internal hard drive. Plug that in, install a carbon copy cloner, and then all you're doing is making a copy from one to the other.
All right, this says that the processor is 1.42 gigahertz, but the memory, it just says it has 512 MB built in. It's kind of small, isn't it?
It is in this day and age, and you know, if you wanted to get some more RAM, you might see things work a little faster on your computer, but it's not, it's acceptable.
Is that the RAM?
Yeah.
Built in?
Yeah.
And then what's the other kind of memory?
Well, the other thing you're thinking of is the size of your hard drive. So you want to see, and if you open you know, a window onto your hard drive, a Finder window in Mac lingo, it'll tell you how much space is there.
Hardware overview, is that what you mean?
Yes, you can. Do you see hard drive on that? You should have in that hardware overview, you should have a listing for your hard drive, and it'll tell you how big it is.
No.
But it'd be just as easy to just open up a window, okay? Open up a Finder window, you know, a view on your folder structure, and that window will tell you how much space is there as well.
So you just go to Finder and look for what?
Just open up a window. And you should see a number there that tells
you. What do you mean
you,
a window?
You know, so you open up a view on your computer that shows you all your folders, right? That's what I mean by a window in this case. Do you see your hard drive on your desktop?
Yeah.
Double click your hard drive.
Okay, let's see. Where is it? It moves around. Okay, here it is. All right,
now you got a window open, right?
Yeah.
And you should see, out on the rim, you should see a number that tells you how big that hard drive is.
Oh, 28 items, 25.09 GB available.
All right, so it's not telling you the total size of it, though, is it? It's just mm-hmm. telling you what you got left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well,
so how do you find what total is?
How big it is? Just open up that Apple System Profiler that you had open before and look under. There should be a category in there, and I don't have a Mac right in front of me, but there should be a category in there that is the hardware, okay? And underneath that category, there should be a hard drive, and it'll tell you how big that hard drive is.
All right, I've got About This Mac open.
Yeah.
And then there's Software Update.
What do you see in About This Mac?
I'm in About This Mac.
Yeah, what's it say there?
Version Mac OS X version 10.4.10, Software Update, Processor Size, which I read you, Memory Size, which I read you, Startup Disk, more info.
What does Startup Disk say? It just tells you what the Startup Disk is,
it
right?
It just tells the what I've named it.
Well, click on More Info.
Right. Okay, it has hardware over on the side.
Okay, so click on the hardware category.
Well, it's got a whole list.
Right, and do you see your hard drive on that list?
I see memory.
No, you probably see your hard drive on that list too. It may not say your hard drive. It may tell you the name of the company that made it or something of that nature. But just click around in that informational panel and you'll find your hard drive and it will tell you how big it is. I would imagine that it's 250 gigabytes. I would guess in the age of the computer you're talking about, I imagine that's what it is. Somewhere between 160 and 250.
Okay, thank you.
So, and easy enough to find. Just, you know, if nothing else, just Google the model of iMac that
and
it'll tell you how big the hard drive in that was. You got the stock hard drive in there. You didn't replace it. So it'll tell you the size. And I'd be relatively certain that it's between 160 and 250 gigabytes.
And do you have any recommendations as to where to buy the backup?
No, it really doesn't matter.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is our monthly program on computers. And today our guest is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Listeners, if you've got a question about a computer, you can give us a call this afternoon. Greg will help you out. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free line. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. No one waiting at the moment to talk with us. In terms of going from, you know, this woman is she's a dyed-in-the-wool Mac user. And when you're thinking about buying another computer or working with another computer, and you've been either a Windows user or a Microsoft user, you know, a PC user or an Apple user, does it take, what's the learning curve? You know, we had a little bit of a difficulty there in terms of, you know, view versus window. Mm-hmm. How different mm-hmm. is the terminology on these machines? I've never used an Apple.
Well, there are differences, but I think they're a lot less radical than they used to be. I mean, both of them use the paradigm of folders and within folders and documents inside those folders, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you've used Windows, then you know what that's like, and the Mac uses the same kind of an idea. How you get to them looks a little different, but it's not radically
okay.
different. In Windows, you know, when you open programs, they show up along the bottom in something called the taskbar, okay, where your start menu is.
Start thing.
You know, in the Mac, spread along the bottom is a thing called the dock, which is not only open programs, but also programs that you want to be able to get to easily, like the programs on the start menu, right? So
yeah.
The dock is kind of a combined start menu and taskbar in the same way that Windows uses the start menu to get to programs easily and the taskbar to show what programs are open. So, you know, it's not radically different. And depending on, you know, what kind of productivity software you use, you know, it may be very similar because you might use Microsoft's version of Office for the Mac, you know, which is a very nice version of Office, so that'd look a little different, but fairly familiar to you. Not radically different. If you use something like open source software, like OpenOffice or NeoOffice, they'd look the same, pretty much the same on either machine. And that's the case with most software.
Okay.
Now, they won't necessarily work on either machine, obviously, because, you know, it's either written for Windows or it's written for the Mac. The thing I'll say there, though, is that, you know, now these days, Apple itself, since it now runs on Intel chips, the same Intel chips that Windows has always run on, Apple itself has created a little piece of software that allows you to actually boot into Windows.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a copy of the Mac OS and the Windows OS on your computer and start up with either one. There are, at this point, a couple of companies and probably more coming down the road that are making software called virtualization software that allow you to run both operating systems at the same time. So you're running, your Mac OS on this Apple machine you have, and at the same time you're running this window that has Windows running inside of it. You've been able to do something like that for a number of years, but it used to be painfully slow,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the point where a lot of people wouldn't, unless they really had to do it, you might not think of it as being very useful. Now it's pretty darn efficient, and for general applications, not a problem at all. Now, 3D games, no, you're still not going to run 3D games even virtually. You know, if you're running your Office apps and that kind of thing, it's not problematic at all. And with that virtualization software, you can not only run Windows inside your Macintosh, you can run all kinds of flavors of Linux as well, if you're so inclined. So it could be an interesting way of living if you'd want to juggle three operating systems. You got to like operating systems,
yeah.
If you want to do something like that. But I do think that generally when people ask me about, you know, a lot of people these days ask about switching to a Macintosh because, you know, a lot less problems with, for whatever reason, with viruses and spyware and that kind of thing. So, and people like iPods, and Apple makes iPods. And so that gets people interested maybe in using their computers. And I always say, look, if you've got years and years and years of Windows experience and you're satisfied with Windows, there are things you have to relearn, you know, so you might not want to do it. And in particular, if you have to use it for work, you know, and your work is Windows-centric, then, you know, maybe you don't want the added hassle of running Windows within the Macintosh operating system, even if you could do it. But, you know, it's I don't think it's particularly painful. There have always been some pretty good books about Windows for Mac users. Windows as a second language for Mac users, for example. And lately, there have been some pretty good books that have come along now that are about switching for Windows users. And you do get the advantage of, you know, less malicious software at this point, anyway.
Okay, let's take a call now. A listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Yes.
Hi.
I have an Airport Extreme base station, and I think I bought it about 3 years ago, perhaps, and I bought it from L.A. It's an online outfit in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And it worked very well, and, of course, it was always touted as being able to cut through walls and, you know, go long distances and stuff. Well, okay, because of the configuration of my house and where I, you know, where they could run an extended cable line, because I do have it on cable, it's actually just about 60 feet. And it would have, and when I first got it, it went through two walls and this full length of 60 feet, and it worked fine. But over time, it's kind of deteriorated. And now, I have to set it in the open hallway. And what the problem is that it keeps flashing that wonderful sign, you were not connected to the Internet. And so I've learned to just, actually what I do is I just tip the screen forward a little bit, and that connects it. And then it'll go for quite some time, and then, you know, when I change, for example, if I want to go into a folder or I want to click onto something else, and the machine actually has to do something, which means it has to use the power supply, I get, you are not connected. I had a friend look, and she said, my power supply that's coming into the computer is not regular. Well, of course, it's coming through that airport. So, A, my question is, the airport, I think, has a battery in it, right? And does it decline with time? Do I just need a new battery, or do I have a problem?
Okay, ma'am, let's talk about a couple of things here, okay? So when we say airport, we're just talking about wireless Ethernet or Wi-Fi, which is Apple has branded it by the name airport, okay?
Right.
And you have two things.
I don't know what it's normally called. I know what the box says.
Yeah.
I have a router that feeds into this airport, which sends it out to,
right,
I presume,
right,
Wi-Fi. Is,
do you have cable internet, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a box that the cable company gave you, right? And your internet feed comes into that box, right?
A router.
Right.
Yes.
And, a router that the cable company gave you.
Yes.
Yeah. And you've taken a cable, an Ethernet cable, and you've plugged that into your airport base station, right?
Yes. And they
thing that looks kind of like a – is yours one of those flying saucer-looking ones,
yes,
there? Yeah. Yeah.
Very pretty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, well, it is. Yeah, it's an attractive piece of hardware. Apple makes attractive hardware.
Right.
And then that, so your internet feed comes into that box that the cable company gave you, and the wire from that box goes into your airport base station, and your airport base station broadcasts that signal out so your laptop can pick it up, right?
Very true.
And in your laptop, there's
it's a Mac also.
Right. In your laptop, there's a piece of circuitry in there, okay, called an airport card.
Yes, that's right.
That allows it to pick up that signal.
Right.
And get your internet connection.
Right.
And as I understand what you're telling me is initially you had this set up and everything was working hunky-dory, right?
Right.
And gradually what has happened over time, you keep dropping that signal.
Yes.
So I take it you'll get it for a while. And then it'll drop,
yes.
Right? And how long have you been experiencing that?
Well, as I say, it's been over time. It's been getting worse and worse. When I go online and I turn my browser off, when I go online, when I turn on my browser, the little shield on the top of the iBook says, you know, that I've got full power.
Yeah.
Then as soon as I hit one of my things on my desktop, it goes off and says you don't have it, and then I wait a few seconds, and it decides to come on. Or, as I say, I just tip, and this I've been doing for quite some time. I just pull the screen, you know, it's a laptop, and so the screen opens up, right? And if I pull it straight up, then it will frequently come back. I mean, it does come back.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna give you a few ideas here, okay? Because there are various reasons that this could be happening, and these are things for you to explore, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I've found is that typically in situations like this, whether it's a Mac or a Windows machine or a Linux machine, for that matter, running on Wi-Fi, when you see this kind of thing, it's because you're getting some kind of interference, all right? Because it's a wireless signal. It's kind of a radio signal, right? So you know how you can get static on the radio if the antenna's not in the right place or for various reasons, right? It's the same kind of idea. So a couple of typical reasons why something like this might happen are, one, you've got other devices that have come on in the house that are creating interference, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A microwave oven could be the problem. It could be...
Wait a minute. Every house has got a microwave oven. And
right.
We've always had microwave ovens.
Well, yeah, but...
It's 40 feet away.
I'm not saying it's
mine,
the problem in your case, okay? Unless you've added a microwave oven to the array in your house. It could be a cordless phone.
Yes.
Have you gotten a new cordless phone over time?
Yes. And I read the instructions and it said don't put it side by side. So it's about... 8 feet away.
Yeah, it might. It's possible that it doesn't necessarily have to be side by side. And I'd say the more important thing is what's the frequency of the cordless phone compared to the frequency of your airport base station.
Oh, okay.
You know, is it a 900 megahertz cordless phone or is it 2.4 or 5. Whatever? You know, check. I'm just saying, check that out. Okay, as a possibility, try.
Whoops. What do you mean that if it's hello?
Just try try moving your cordless phone. And see if that does anything for you, okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's, and again, it might not be the cordless phone, but interference from another device is a possibility because this is a wireless radio type signal and it's subject to interference, right?
What about fluorescent lights?
Possible, yeah. All of these things are possibilities. I'm not saying any of them is the case, but, you know. If you've changed environmental conditions, so to speak, under which your base station is operating, you might see something like this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you might not have changed anything. Okay, but people around you may have changed some things. Okay, notably, you may have a bunch of people who have suddenly installed wireless or over time installed wireless base stations of their own,
mm-hmm.
right? And they may be bleeding out. Interference. I don't know how dense a neighborhood you live in, but you know I can sit in my lazy boy in my living room, and I could see about 10 wireless nodes in my neighborhood. And if you live, do you live in the city?
What do you mean you can see 10 wireless nodes?
If I call up the administration software for my base station, and I tell it,
you have a Wi-Fi.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. If I call up the software in my computers that I use to administer my Wi-Fi connection, right? And I tell that software, show me all the access points that are around me, okay, that my computer can see, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see probably 10 of them, maybe a dozen. Mm-hmm. And if you live in the city, you may be able to see a lot of them as well. And some of them may be bleeding signal that's causing interference to your base station, right? Well, if you go into that administrative software, and again, I don't have a Mac in front of me here, but otherwise I'd tell you the exact step. But go into your airport administration utility and your airport setup software, and there's a place in there that'll show you how many that may show you how many other base stations you can see, right?
Okay.
And in that case, that may be the problem now. There's also a place in your airport administration software to set the channel for your base station, right? You could set it to various channels from 1 to, I think, 11 is at the top end of the scale.
Okay.
And typically there's a default. Maybe it's set at 6 or something like that, right? And it may be that everybody else is set at that default too, right? So you're all jamming through channel 6 there and getting in each other's way. And maybe what you want to do in that instance is try it on another channel.
Now, how do I get to airport administrative?
It should be in your Mac, in your utilities folder. You should see a piece of software in there, airport administration utility.
Okay.
You got an airport setup utility as well, but all of this kind of stuff is in there.
Okay.
So there's one kind of set of possibilities. You're getting interference from something.
Okay.
Either it's another device or it's wireless base stations that people in your neighborhood have. And you might try either moving those other devices, not using them when you're using your computer wirelessly, or you might try changing the channel on your base station. So those are possible.
Yeah, so at 6 in the morning, there's very little problem.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
See, that makes me think even more that you might be seeing, a neighborhood interference type of thing.
But what I probably need is a new channel.
Right. Then you might have, it's also possible that you have a hardware problem, right? You talked about when you click on a piece of software or you move the screen, things change. Okay. Well, there are a lot of little wires running around in there. Including some wires that are in the rim of your laptop screen that are the antennas for your airport card, right?
That's what I wondered.
Right.
That is what seems to me. I move it forward, and so it's vertical.
Right. Right.
I can't see it as well, but it's vertical. It picks up, and then I can tip it back, and I can read, and everything is fine until I change something.
That's right. Well, there are a lot of little wires in that laptop screen.
So that
are connected to your airport card that provide the antenna for it in effect. So if you raise and lower that screen a lot of times, sometimes some of those little wires get loose, and you see problems like this. So if trying to isolate other devices or change the channel of your base station, if that doesn't solve the problem, you might want to have somebody look at it for the possibility that there's a hardware situation.
Yeah, and I suppose also that hardware situation, you could also test that by going to a place in the community that had
right.
wireless, and you just open up your machine and see if it's a little wonky.
Right. That's Celeste has made a very good suggestion there as well. If you want to test some of this stuff, a good way to do it is to take it to any number of coffee shops in Champaign-Urbana that have, free Wi-Fi and see if you can get on there,
you know.
And if you get on there and everything's fine, then it's probably not a hardware problem in your laptop. It's probably one of those other things
other
we talked
things.
About.
So it's a process of elimination and put the scientific method to work. Let's take another call. A listener online, too. Hi.
I'm calling about... you talked a little bit about this changing over to Macs, and I'm a professor of art, and I photograph a lot of pieces onto a digital camera and then transfer it onto my laptop. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm using a compact. It's old, and it's time for me to get a new laptop.
Mm-hmm.
I also do write up a lot of Word documents, make a lot of folders. The institution I teach with, they really like their Dells, so that's what I'm with when I'm at work. And I really love Macs as far as what I've heard, and I would like to get one, a notebook. And so I'm wondering if that would be a good for a visual person and to explore designing and things like that as well, and still be able to do the Word docs and the Windows stuff. Can you hybridize fairly easily, and would that be a better choice? Because you can do visual stuff on regular Windows.
Right. The answer, I would say, is it depends. Okay. I'll tell you that, all of our the photographers at the paper and the people that put together the paper graphically, they all use Macs. And that's fairly common. I mean, Macs are widespread in the visual industry, filmmaking as well, So they're great for that.
Okay.
Now, the question is, do you need to go to work and connect to a Windows network, that runs, entirely on Windows and makes it hard for you to get your Mac in there and do some of the things that you need to do? For example, do you use, does your work use Outlook, for example?
Outlook?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you use Outlook?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, see, there's no Outlook for the Mac, for example.
Right.
There's Entourage, which is kind of what the software Microsoft makes for the Mac, and it should work fine on a Windows Outlook oriented network. But you never know, So that's in that case, if you need to connect to work and do things, I might talk to your systems people first
they're separate computers. I'll be doing separate things.
Uh-huh.
I'll bring my laptop sometimes, but other times I really won't probably be trying to converge the two.
Right.
So
how often do you think you're going to need to do stuff on that's really Windows centered? All the time?
It varies. It's very concentrated at times and a lot, and then at other times it's not much really. So
you might be perfectly happy then.
Yeah.
It'd be great for your visual stuff. You'd have you wouldn't have any problem at all with that.
Photoshop
you might even
that.
Like it a lot better,
Yeah.
As far as general kinds of documents, like word processing documents, you don't really have any problem there. You can either get a version of Office for the Mac that has Word, or you can get any number of pieces of software, including Apple's own Pages, that will make documents in Word format that you can trade back and forth seamlessly. So
okay.
You don't have any problem there. Where you sometimes get into, a more difficult situation, particularly if you have a systems administration staff that is hostile to the idea of anything but a Windows machine, where you might get into problems is in that network stuff and handling email with Outlook and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you should be able to do that without a lot of problem. But some IT guys just and gals are not very open to the idea of having people running anything but Windows.
Last I checked, that's their stance. So that's okay. We'll just move on. I'll go ahead and get my own Macintosh. But I think one of the reasoning behind it was that they didn't understand how to repair if something happened.
Yeah.
Things like that. So I felt maybe they felt vulnerable. But
I'll tell you, I'll make one other suggestion in your case, and then you can go and look into this yourself. But, Apple makes two kinds of laptops, three in effect now. But they make the MacBook, and it's a nice laptop, and they make the MacBook Pro, okay?
Okay.
Big difference between the two is that the MacBook Pro has a dedicated video card, right? So it's got its own circuitry to handle images and whatnot, and its own RAM memory, share of RAM memory. In the case of the MacBook, it uses part of the system RAM to handle the things you see on the screen.
I see.
And for someone who's visual like you, you might prefer one with its own discrete video system.
Yeah, that sounds like a good thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't use up as much space that way. It's a separate.
Well, it's more. It handles it more efficiently,
and
it feels less like heavy lifting if you have, because you're offloading some of the work of manipulating pictures and that kind of thing onto that video card and that video RAM instead of drawing on your main processor and your main RAM to do it.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So it just feel a little more zippy to you.
Yeah, I was going to inquire about which you preferred. And then there's the Air. Is that the new one, the real thin one?
Yeah.
Is that just more just for lightweight toting around and stuff?
Yeah, if you're going to use this as a functional work machine, as really your main functional work machine, right?
Yeah.
Then you probably want to think in terms of a MacBook or a MacBook Pro.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your help.
Okay.
And next we're going to take a call on line three. And just a second here, let me just reintroduce our guest this afternoon. Greg Klein is with us this afternoon on our monthly program on computers. He's on the Science and Technology beat for the News Gazette. The markets are closed today because of the President's Day holiday, so we have a few more minutes of time today than we do usually. So let's go next to a listener on line three. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I seem to be an outcast. I got a desktop, compact. It's my son put on a backup hard drive, Maxtor.
Uh-huh.
And he put that on about a year ago for a birthday present. And my question is, will that backup hard drive, if I get a virus in my desktop computer, will that go to the the backup hard drive too?
Well, sir, it will potentially, and it kind of depends on how your computer is set up there. But if you're so, I take it your son has put that in there, and he's probably has he set it up to automatically back up?
Automatically back up everything.
Yeah.
Every time I turn the computer on, it's just another hard drive.
Right. It copies it over there.
Right.
Yeah. So if you've got a virus or, some other kind of malicious software on your main machine and it's copying everything, it might copy it over to your backup, right?
Well, that's
but
what,
I
that
assume
was
if you're
– will it or would not? See, I got the backup in case I did get a hard any kind of
– right.
I have all kind of protection. Well, I got AOL and they got quite a bit of protection. Fact is, this machine run a little slow sometimes, I think, because of so much protection.
Right.
But I guess got the backup because rather than backup on a CD disk or anything I wanted, my son got the wise idea that just get another backup.
Oh, I think he's right.
Well,
I
true.
Think that's the way to kind of do it these days, given the price of second hard drives.
Yes, that's the point. I have a big one. I don't know what mine is. I don't know whether there's a couple hundred or 400 megabytes. I don't even know how many bytes it is.
But my suspicion is that if your son was savvy enough to set this up, give you a second hard drive and have it automatically back up, that he's also been savvy enough to put in security software that filters out those infections, so that your backup is clean.
Oh well, the filters AOL provides wouldn't do that.
Well, it would to an extent, but you probably also want to have any virus, any spyware software running on your computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, another question. I've often, is there a way, we're talking about XP 9.1. Is there any way that I can copy my address book? in case I got a virus. If I lose my address book, I'd be kind of hard. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
but
is there any way I can copy that?
You're using AOL, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's where your address book is, right?
Yes.
I'm not certain that you can export that. But what I would do is when you're in AOL, there's going to be a file menu up at the top of your screen. It should be on the top left side of your screen.
Yes.
And I'd
what's the name?
I'd get into the I'd get into your address book view, and I'd go to that file menu. And if you see anything like an option there, like import or export, right?
Okay.
And you may be able to export that as some kind of a text file that you can import into other things if you need to. Or it may be that in, and I don't have AOL software in front of me here, but it may be in AOL software itself, although they're using the web these days as well. There may be an option to do that in there as well.
Yeah.
So what I'm telling you is you may be able to export that address book as some other kind of a file, all right?
Okay.
Probably a text file,
okay?
And that gives you, in effect, a backup of it, because if you need to open up a text file, pretty easy to do with all kinds of programs, right?
You're right.
Okay?
Well, I got – that's the other thing. There are some – and there's two things. The – well, I put everything – a lot of my documents, but then I have AOL emails come in, and I would like to save them on some kind of a – of course, they would be saved on my extra hard drive. But I'd like to protect them against loss. Is there any way to do the same thing with emails that I was asking about the email address?
Again, possible, but I'm recalling off the top of my head that in AOL, it's they make it difficult to export that stuff.
They do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you see, since AOL went completely free to everybody, I sometimes think it's a little slower.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're probably right.
But I've had it for a long time, and the reason, you know, old people don't like to change, and I have another DSL format too, but I don't want to change it because I know how to use this one. And I can find everything pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I've stuck with it, and now that it went free anyhow, I might as well stay with it. You know, you don't have to pay any monthly tab for it.
Right.
And so it's I like their way of. Another thing is there any limit to saved on AOL, on AOL's big saver? You know, they have on your emails that says, go down to the bottom, you can click on save, and it'll pop up the window, save on my hard drive or save on AOL.
Mm-hmm.
Save on AOL, I understand, is limitless.
In effect, if you're saving email, it I'm sure there's a limit, okay, but in effect, if you're saving email, it probably is limitless because email is not – it doesn't take up very much space, okay?
Right.
So you can save thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of emails, and you're not going to butt up against that limit.
That gives me confidence because I've often thought that surely in the world there must be a limit someplace. Because I've got a bunch of them.
Oh, I'm sure that there is a, you know, there is some limit, but it's not a limit you're probably going to run into.
Before I got on this new backup, I had 700 emails saved, and I lost, or AOL lost them for me.
Well, that's not very good.
No, it is not. But since I got on this other, and they have what you can save on AOL, and I'm trusting that they will be saved. They will be saved on that big bank they have, and I'll always be able to find them. Am I wrong?
Well, your theory's right. Whether that's what happens depends on how good they are about maintaining their system, right?
Sure.
I mean, no system is perfect, so there's always the possibility. But they do, as does Google and anyone else, Yahoo,
right,
or anyone else you get an email account like that from. They do take steps to preserve that stuff and back it up.
No one's perfect.
No, no.
Well, but the thing is, they save them according to date. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And my date goes back to 2004. And I like it that way because then you can find something. If you're looking for something, you have a vague idea when it is, you scroll down and you can find it. And
mm-hmm.
if dear old AOL saves them, it'll be there, shouldn't it?
Yes, as long as nothing goes terribly wrong with their system.
And I want to thank the listener for his call this afternoon. And we've got a couple of other calls here I don't think we're going to be able to take because we're really bumping up against it. And we've had some fairly involved calls today.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I think if we got into another call, we might find ourselves in trouble with the clock. So to speak. So before we do have a little bit of time here, though, left over. And maybe you just give us your thoughts, Greg, on sub-notebooks.
Well, that topic is getting kind of interesting because just before Christmas, there's this company, Asus, which a lot of people have run across, but wouldn't know because they make motherboards, the big main circuit board that's inside your computer. And they came out with this little laptop called the EEEPC, which they pronounce EPC. And, you know, it cost a few hundred bucks and didn't have a fabulous amount of storage and had kind of a small screen. And it ran a version of Linux instead of Windows or the Mac OS. And you'd think, well, it's just a little niche machine that only geeks are going to buy. And they sold like hotcakes. And I think the reason is because it's a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, what they want is a machine to handle email and look at the web,
mm-hmm.
do it wirelessly, preferably. And it's a perfect little machine for that. And now we're seeing there are others coming out. You know, other companies saw that Asus was able to sell this thing. So you have Everex is a company that was making an inexpensive laptop or an inexpensive desktop for Walmart. And they're making a machine called the Cloudbook that's the same idea now that will be sold through Walmart. And in this case, we're talking about a laptop for less than $300. HP now has looked at this, and they're supposed to come out with one as well, and I don't think they'll be the last. The point I make with people on these is, look, if you're just looking for a little portable internet machine, just something to do your email and to use the web, and even if you want to use like internet telephony, you know, like Skype, these are very good for that. Don't cost much. No, they're not. You're not going to use them as your main machine, although they have monitor out ports and USB ports, so you could effectively hook up a keyboard and a mouse and a bigger monitor if you wanted to. But it's a functional machine for people.
Yeah, and you can of course if you just put that into your search engine, you can.
Right.
I know. When you suggested maybe we talk a little bit about that, there's a YouTube review.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of fun to mm-hmm. you can see somebody handling it and
right,
using it.
Right,
so,
I think you could find several of those if you look. Yeah.
There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Greg, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for everybody calling.
Greg Klein is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. Computers and You is a program we do once a month on the third Monday of the month here on the Afternoon Magazine.